This episode of Super Garbage Day is brought to you by the movie Die Hard. That's right, Die Hard on VHS, the 1988 American action film starring Bruce Willis. It's a timeless action extravaganza where John McClane goes through the towers of Yerkesharko or whatever, defeating some evil German guy. And it's wonderful. It's a movie you can watch any time of the year. Throw it on in January or in summer. Also, another movie I want to recommend is The Santa Claus with Tim Allen, a movie where Tim Allen becomes Santa Claus. It's very charming. It's great for families. It's perfect for this time of year. So if you want to watch a movie right now during the holidays, I recommend The Santa Claus with Tim Allen. And any other time in the rest of the year, I recommend Die Hard. Okay, on with the show. A Christmas movie. Welcome to Super Garbage Day, a retro video game review show where an actual garbage man plays games 20 years or older that you, the listener, chooses. Every week, I randomly pick a game submitted by the community to play, kindly dissect, and then we all discuss. Welcome to episode number 52. I'm your host, the Dream Boy Lover and the Nightmare Teacher, B. Ross. So what's new in the land of Super Garbage Day Incorporated? Well, let's address the unicorn in the room. Last week, I caught the whooping clap, and I was down and out for nearly the whole week. I appreciate your patience, and just to let you know, I played a lot of games in my downtime. I have also, during this downtime, decided to bring the show Backlog Eternal to the main feed. So it will no longer be a Patreon exclusive. It's going to be dropped on the main feed whenever I finish those episodes. And this is because I want to make room in the Patreon page for more events. And of course, retro deep cuts. Speaking of Patreon, I want to welcome and thank our newest patron, Chris Copeland from the Retro Hangover Podcast. It is a super fantastic show that you need to put in your rotation right now. Starting soon, the 12 Minutes of Christmas is an event that every day until Christmas, I will play a game, stream it live for 12 minutes that was picked by the patrons. It's going to be done in the first impression video style, and I'm going to try to make it as entertaining as possible. Speaking of that, as always, you can catch my first impression video of the week's game on our Super Garbage Day YouTube channel and occasional streaming on the Super Garbage Day Twitch. Links are in the motherfucking show notes. Now, everything aside, let's get to that retro question of the week. MK Keith asks, what's a game you think defined our generation? This is going to be interesting. Zodiac responds, Sonic the Hedgehog. Like it or not, that's it. I don't know about that, but I don't know. It's there. There's a Mount Rushmore of our generational games. Sonic's on there. Seeky Wisdom replied with just a GIF of the first level of Mario. So there's that. Masked Keaton adds, Pac-Man. He really helped the arcade boom. Also true, but I'm not sure what generation we're talking about. So I think we're all pretty much millennials, maybe a little bit of Gen X. I think that's where we're at. So I think that's a pretty accurate. Pac-Man is a really good answer, personally. Van Fernal also contributes by saying, what is in quotes, our generation? He says, this game 100% embodies our generation. It's Turtles in Time on the SNES and arcade. It's Pizza Hut. It's the arcades. It's Blockbuster Video. It's the perfect snapshot of the peak of our forming years. That's a damn good answer as well. And you know what? I honestly thought about this, and I don't mean to be boring, but it's hard for me not to say that we're not Mario generation. I mean, Mario's been there, at least for me. I'm an elder millennial, so I was born right around when Mario came out. Mario's just been in my life since I was a kid. I remember the Mario cereal, those little soda cans. I remember the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, the Weird Movie, the games all along the way, the new movie. Mario's now like a part of my children's life, and I have a Mario tattoo on my chest. So Personally, it's without a shadow of a doubt Mario. But I think all these other answers actually have a basis for argument, so I'd like to hear that. And you can join the arguments or even add your own retro question of the week by joining our Discord. The link is in the show notes and it is free. Come hang out with the boys. Okay, now it's time to ask, what are you playing? Okay, get this. So I had a little bit of like a little bit of a Steam budget, and by little, I mean like $20. And I wanted to find a super obscure game that was like under $10. And I came across this game called Freedom Finger. And let me tell you, it is awesome. So it's a shoot 'em up where it's got a very unique, unconventional art style. Kind of, I think, you know, Adult Swim style games. And it the entire soundtrack is done by independent artists like indie rockers and punk rock bands and like rappers like Aesop Rock. And it's a shoot 'em up slash rhythm game. So it goes along with, it's almost like you're playing a music video, but it's a shoot 'em up. It's really well done. And the soundtrack is, if you're into this kind of music, this thing is awesome. I had no idea this existed, but it's called Freedom Finger. Check it out on Steam. I got it for like $7. It's cool as hell. I didn't even know this game existed. So check that out. Now I want to introduce a new section. Everybody missed him, myself included. So now, let me introduce you to Miller's Minute.
Hello, everyone. It is your boy, Mr. Miller. And I am here for a new segment called Miller's Minute. And it's just going to be a new thing, seeing as I can't always be here to review things with B-Ross, the Wonder Boss, the Garbage Boy, whatever he's calling himself these days. I just wanted to stop in and give some updates on current video game news. I know we usually do retro stuff here, but also want to keep you in the modern zeitgeist. Also give an update on what you're playing and all that good stuff. So we'll just start that off with what is the new news? Currently, this is probably going to be old news by the time you hear this episode, because the actual video game awards are coming up, but the Golden Joysticks are in, and we have a landslide winner. No one really was doubting this, at least if you're in the know. Baldur's Gate 3 coming in, landslide victory, best storytelling, best visual design. Let's see, we got best community and best supporting performer, PC game of the year, and ultimate game of the year from the Golden Joysticks. They deserve everything. Larian Studios, Studio of the Year. This game is fantastic. If you have a device that is capable of playing it, I 100% endorse this. A big D&D nerd myself, this is the closest to the actual experience that you will get. It is amazing. And the voice performances, the animations, everybody needs to take a page out of this book and incorporate it into their game design. This is a masterpiece, and I will be playing it well past 200 hours. I'm 85 hours in. I have a busy schedule. I'm not able to dive in as much as I want. But every second that I spend with this game is memorable. It's not one of those, oh, well, I'm just going to sit here and run around for 3 hours and not accomplish anything. Every second that you play this game, the choices matter. What you do matters. It is. I love it. Love it, love it, love it, love it to death. The next thing I want to bring up is, what you playing, Mr. Miller? Well, besides Baldur's Gate 3, I recently stumbled into a gem that I don't know if I'm just late to the party or if I just didn't have the opportunity for it, but Bayonetta. Now, this is not, if you have young children or maybe even partners that are sensitive to the idea of a giant goth dommy mommy being the obsession of your hopes and dreams, make them leave the room now, because this game is absolutely ridiculous from top to bottom, and I'm here for it. You have this giantess of a woman in slick black clothes, lots of cleavage, lots of ass, and she is just stripper dancing and shooting and killing demons and angels both. All of, she has guns on her heels, my guys. Like, this is absolutely ludicrous, but it is so much fun. The cutscenes are absolutely bonkers. The whole monster design is over the top. The entire time you're fighting these biblically accurate angels and just ridiculous demons as a witch who her hair is her clothes and her clothes are her guns. And it's silly, but so good. And I don't know if I slept on it or if it just wasn't even in my limelight, but recently came into a Switch copy of Bayonetta 2. I have not played Bayonetta 1 because a little bit of history on this. Bayonetta 1 was an Xbox game, and then the studio switched over to Nintendo. Yes, this is an M-rated Nintendo title. This is the one that you keep locked in the basement when your kids go away, and you bring it out with your glass of whiskey, and you have yourself a good-ass time, because this is... it's like Devil May Cry style combo fighter, but oh man, you just have to see it. It sounds dumb, and at first I was like, oh, this is gonna be stupid, but I love it. It's charming. It is, like, even with its over the top ridiculousness, it has this charm to it that I can't get over. I'm loving it. And in other news, we got speaking of Switch, we have the re-release of Super Mario RPG. I have not had a chance to revisit it, but I have seen at least the reskin. I hear there are some quality of life upgrades that make the experience a little more enjoyable, like the original mechanic of doing extra damage where you would, say, stomp on a Goomba a little more powerful. There's actually a visual or audio cue now for that, which is a nice, you don't just have to memorize the timings for your moves. And, you know, the visual style, it's more akin to the modern Mario. But as we went over in our Mario 2, you know, the aesthetic is always akin to that. So it's not the original square style. It's a little more Nintendo-esque, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. And I will try and pick a copy of that up and give my full review of that. But if that's not possible, then, you know, it's out there. There's other platforms. And also, it's Mario RPG. I'm surprised we haven't done a series on that so far. And, this first episode, it's a short one. I will have more fleshed out. This is my first go. Get easy on me. This is a new segment, and but this is Mr. Miller giving you like some hot deets, some little tidbits. We'll talk about. Oh wait, if you haven't played Dave the Diver, play that. That's another thing. We'll get into that more detail. This is a little more modern take on what's going on in the gaming world, and but sending it back to you, B. Ross. The Miller Minute's over. Peace. Bye. I'll see you later.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. You are a scholar and a great friend. I hope you're doing well up in the land of ports. See you next week. All right, it's time for the game. And this week's game is, it's a game. It's Nightmare Creatures on the Nintendo 64.
Yeah!
Nightmare Creatures is a 1997 survival horror video game developed by Callisto Entertainment, who I don't think made much after this, but okay, for the PlayStation, Microsoft Windows, and the N64. A sequel, Nightmare Creatures 2, was released 3 years later. Now, I want to, before we get into first impressions, let me just read this crazy-ass story that this game has, so... The story behind Nightmare Creatures draws upon gothic horror elements of the 19th century. It begins in 1666 when a devil-worshipping cult called the Brotherhood of Hecate, were conducting sinister experiments in London so as to take over the city and then the world. The Brotherhood tried to develop an elixir that would endow them with superhuman powers. By the way, the elixir had rabies, STDs, and all kinds of various colds and flus mixed into it. Their experiments only created nightmarish creatures. And then they decided to use these creatures as an army of conquest. One of their number, Samuel Pepys, set their headquarters on fire, resulting in the first great fire of London. So if you wondered how that happened, there you go. Now, jump ahead to 1834. The game takes place in London, where it falls victim, the city of London, to several evil occurrences. Monster sightings are reported along the news of people mutating into ungodly creatures, and that the dead are walking from their graves and walking amongst the living, which is the same thing. What a dumb, redundant explanation. All of London is in a panic and vulnerable to the ghastly schemes of Adam Crowley, a mad scientist and occultist enlisting the help of the Brotherhood. 200 and some odd years later. Okay. Until a mysterious book is dropped off at the home of Ignatius Blackward, a priest and occult expert, he soon discovers that the book is a lost diary of Samuel Pepys, which contained the Brotherhood's research. Knowing he needs help, Ignatius sends the diary to a renowned American immunologist named Dr. Jean Francisius of New Orleans, who shows up with his daughter Nadia Francisius in town. The good doctor promptly murdered and the book is stolen. At the funeral, Ignatius and Nadia are approached by a man who gives them a note reading, "Know about Adam Crowley? Brotherhood of Hecate? HVHJ. Ignatius and Nadia head out to an address listed on the note, hoping to seek out Crowley and resolve the monstrous activities that grips London. What the fuck? All right, first impressions. Well, if you watched my first impression video, you will see that I felt the game was okay at first. It's a little weird. I think it's really funny that the first thing you see in the game is kind of like this little scrolling area of text trying to tell you the storyline while there's like an orgy fight of monsters happening. I don't quite understand. I hear it's different on the PlayStation version, but to me, it was already kind of funny. Once I got into the game, I picked Ignatius because, he was on the left. Got into the game, realized quickly that the graphics are actually not that bad for its time. And the controls aren't as bad as I thought they were going to be. A lot of people complained that, oh, it's tank controls, but it's kind of tank controls because it gives you strafing options. And I got into it, started fighting, noticed that there are special attacks. There's like weird. It's one of those games that has that kind of fighting game teaches you these combos, but it's a beat 'em up, but it's 3D. It's also a horror. It's a lot of things going on. And as I traversed the levels, I realized that it is not an easy game, but it wasn't that hard. Of course, that was because I played the first two levels, and then that was the end of my first impression video. But little did I know that after those two levels, that things were going to get really, really crazy and silly very quickly. So let's just jump right into the gameplay. This game is, so it's a lot of things, but ultimately what it boils down to is it's a beat 'em up. That's what it feels like. It's a 3D beat 'em up with, you know, HP Lovecraft, I guess, gothic horror style theming. Most of the time you're just getting from point A to point B. The control scheme is kind of bizarre for the controller. I played it on the N64. I thought that the mapping on the controls were weird. Like, you know, like the C button, the yellow C buttons are interesting because one of them is a jump. One of them is a jump back. Another one is moving to and fro. And your attacks are A and B. And one of them is a block, which I guess you're going to be using a lot. But it's really bizarre because the tank controls are there. You feel them. You feel those tank controls. But it feels like it's right in between that evolution when tank controls were coming out of vogue and we were going into like more movement and strafing being used more with 3D games. And I felt that the control scheme, I wish I would have played it on the PS to know. I'm not sure if the PlayStation version allowed you to use the analog sticks, but if it didn't, I would highly assume that it is controlled far better on the N64. I didn't think the controls were that bad. I did find that the combat is interesting. The hitboxes are odd. Sometimes you just end up slicing an enemy in half. And other times you find yourself just whiffing past them. And even if you land these crazy attacks, like there's a forward jump attack that I thought would do like major damage, but it only ended up like slicing off part of the enemy's head. You know, one thing about this game I give it credit for is like the dismemberment is kind of cool. Anytime that was introduced back in those days, it was a cool thing. And I think that was like a next level kind of thing. And this game did a good job of having dismemberment. But, you know, the more I played it, I thought, oh, this is not that bad. Everybody was talking crap about this game. Got through the first two levels. Then I got to level 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and realized this was kind of a one trick pony game. Yes, you're supposed to, you know, get from one area to the other. There's a lot of opening doors. There's tons of fighting. The problem, though, is that it just quickly repeats itself. I do think that it's cool that it gives you all these different backgrounds. Like I like the ship level or like getting on the ship, the India level, but you don't know, like it's unnecessary. And then you have like sewers and then you have graveyards and then you just kind of continue. And at some point it's a little maze like, but around every turn in the game, there's enemies trying to jump scare you, which gets old after the first couple of levels. You just kind of expect it. And the enemy diversity is actually decent, but it's too much happening all the time. I just knew what was coming next. Whether it be like the slow moving zombies or the big hulking weird undead blue Hulk things or that weird amalgamation of the Hulk thing and the werewolf into some four-headed weird creature or even just the werewolves or the flying demon chicks or just the spiders or the sea creatures. I mean, I give it credit for having the diversity it has. But it's the diversity in combat is not really there, and it's not that fun. It was at first. I thought it was going to be a lot better, but I think it ramps up its difficulty very quickly to a point where you find yourself just being frustrated, and you die so often, and the checkpoints are not really well spaced out. And this game has like 20 levels. You know, by the time I was at level 7, I thought, oh my God, how many levels are there? So I looked it up and I was like, there's almost 20. What? But you know, there's boss fights sprinkled in between. And I think the boss fights are kind of cool, but they kind of more rely on the environment. And that's fine, but it almost happens every time. And, you know, during your traversal in this beat-em-up horror, survival horror, I don't really would call it survival horror because you just get a, like an arsenal of items. You get like weapons, different attacks, you know, like all kinds of stuff. You get a lot of healing potions. You get like bombs, dynamite, guns. You know, there's a little bit of Bloodborne going on here where you can shoot the gun. You get like a triple gun where you shoot front and behind you. And what's really cool, though, is when you activate these things, at least it gives you iframes. So anytime you use an item, you can't be hit, which thank God, because it would just make the game incredibly harder than it already is. But man, there are so many weapons. There's like the skulls. There's like the buzzsaw. There's the freezing item, which I was my favorite because that thing is OP, dude. You just hit that freezing weapon. It freezes whatever's around you and they just die. You either by hitting them or they just you just walk away and they explode, which I thought was cool. But the game wore out its welcome very quickly by its difficulty spike and its frustration in the controls. And I found myself actually going from thinking the game was okay to quickly feeling like this is bullshit. Like I cannot get through certain parts because I'm blocking one direction, getting hit from the other, and it can chain an attack where you're pretty much being pinballed in between enemies attacking. And don't even get to the part where it's more than two enemies, because then it's almost nearly impossible. So to be completely honest, I had to use some cheat codes to see how much further I can get. And even with the cheat codes, even with the unlimited everything, I still had a difficult time getting through it. So I understand that for its time, it's cool. And I do think that, like I said, it's an evolution from tank controls into like a more standardized, comfortable control scheme. But man, it's a rough transition, which kind of speaks volumes of the N64, because the N64 was really just a rough transition console. As I wouldn't say the PlayStation is as much, but you know, the N64 is known for that. However, I did feel at fault when I died, but sometimes we're just downright completely unfair. You're just getting annihilated from every direction and there's nothing you can do about it. And those times are very, very frustrating and they happen very often. Your item, you know, you find items throughout the levels that you break boxes or sometimes they get dropped by enemies and there's not enough of them. I know that they give you an abundance, but the game is so punishingly difficult that I even feel with the amount they give you, it's still not enough. Yes, the dynamite and everything's cool, but one second I beat this hulking creature, who, by the way, can also just make things fall on top of you or the ground just shakes under you and you just take damage or fall and get completely disembogulated or whatever the hell the word is. And you have to reset yourself. And by the time you reset yourself, you're getting attacked. And they take so many hits. I don't even understand this little adrenaline gauge that's on the side, because I don't understand what it does. It's the only way sometimes I can tell that I killed a creature after hitting them 600 times, because you can hit them even if they're dead and combo them. And then when you stop, they drop dead. And I thought that was dumb too. It's just a hard game. It's a weird beat 'em up. I give it credit for the diversity of its levels. I do kind of like the boss fights, but it's so unremarkable and so incredibly, incredibly difficult to a point where you just don't want to play it anymore. So let's talk about how the way it looks and the way it sounds. Now, I do give it credit here. It ain't a bad looking game for its time. And I do know with the N64, you know, there's that fog, but I think it fits this game just like Silent Hill's fog fit its game. And, you know, you're never really, I don't know, side blasted or, you know, caught off guard by enemies. You kind of know what's coming because they tend to jump through walls or just appear out of nowhere. And, you know, it's coming. You're always on the defense. But the enemies look decent, you know, for its time period. Like I said, I think the diversity of the enemies is cool. The characters themselves, only played as one because after playing as Ignatius or whatever the hell his name is, I didn't want to play as Nadia. I was done. Once I gave this game like 5 hours, I was over it. I was like, there was nothing in me that wanted to continue forward. other than putting in the cheat codes and playing it further and trying to see what the bosses were like and then watching some videos of past that, because I mean, my patience was worn thin. As far as like the level design, the levels do look cool. I think that they did a good job. The graveyards look great. Like I said, the India level with the ship is cool. The sewers look like sewers. The sounds are fine. They're a little muffled. You just have this droning soundtrack that kind of repeats, and I think it just fits for what it is. You can't really ask for more out of this game in regards to graphics and audio. It's all there. It's one of the stronger parts of the game, especially given the time period it came out. Obviously, these are the pixel blocky era, and there's big limitations as far as audio is concerned. But this game does a good job of showcasing what the N64 could do and its capabilities and compete with the PlayStation. Now, I don't know if the PlayStation version looks better or sounds better. I assume it sounds better because of the CD-based console. But I have to admit that this game doesn't have bad graphics. And it is a product of its time. And its sound is fine. I can tell when things were coming. It had a lot of ambience and directional sound. And for the most part, that's all I can give it. It works. It's serviceable. However, the pacing of the game is not. So it's just very, very difficult. And I don't really need to go any further. So let's just get to this verdict. Nightmare Creatures sits in a very weird spot in video game history because it was successful. It was successful enough to garner a sequel and then a canceled part 3. However, I see why it had its reservations. And I don't know what the second game is like, but the first game is definitely frustrating, but it's old school frustrating to the extreme. It ramps too high. It's kind of almost unplayable in difficulty once you get past the seventh level, to a point of frustration where you just don't want to play it anymore. I don't think it holds up with its difficulty, and I definitely don't think it holds up with its gameplay. And at the end of the day, though, it is an effort. It has its place in video game history. I just cannot recommend it to anybody, and I feel it's not worth even attempting to beat because I don't see the pull there. I don't understand why you would want to even see the end of the game unless you were maybe perhaps doing a retro video game podcast. But I am not going back to this game, and I do not care to see how far I can get. And with that all said, I give Nightmare Creatures on the N64 a D+. Now let's spin that wheel and see what the F is coming next. Okay, so this game is on the original Nintendo Entertainment System. It is a game that has been in the Patreon pool for a long, long time, and I know nothing about it. So, without further ado, the game is Faxanadu, and I'm not sure if it's pronounced that, and there's going to probably be a lot of arguments about the pronunciation, but I'm calling it Faxanadu. So, join me next week as I play and review Faxanadu on the Nintendo Entertainment System. Thank you for being here. I appreciate you being here all the way to the end. If you like the show, please leave a review for us any way you can. It helps the show expand and reach other ears. If you want to join the Patreon, you can start by only $2 and get access to over 30 plus exclusive episodes. Also, you get a chance to vote on certain events, and it's just a fun time to be had. I appreciate it. It funds the show, and I love every one of you that still contribute and keep this hobby alive. So thank you very much, and have a super garbage day. Cut to B.
Thank you for watching with my dad. I just want to say, everybody, guys, bye.